Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, everybody, it's a great one today, you know, for a change. Our pal Mark Leibovich, writer for The Atlantic, joins me again. We have what's called a wide-ranging conversation, but with a recurring theme, just how fucking awful this president and the people around him are. Here's a good example. The White House announced this week that Trump has repealed the 2009 finding by the EPA that climate change is a danger to humankind, and is terminating the federal government's authority to regulate greenhouse gases. Trump, who calls climate change a hoax, is touting the elimination of the, quote, radical rule that became the basis for the, quote, Green New Scam. This will be challenged in court and will work its way to the Supreme Court, where we will lose on a 6-3 vote. How do you know that, Al? Oh, come on. So, big victory for fossil fuels and bad news for everyone else on the planet, except for really old people, I suppose, unless they die in a heat wave next summer. Let's see. Any good news? No. I guess the government is going to shut down. It seems that Republicans are taking a hard line, no budging on masks, on body cams, on wearing name tags or short of that, badge numbers, and requiring the use of judicial warrants to enter and search a home. So the Department of Homeland Security, which is huge, will have a shutdown. ICE won't be affected since it's flush with funding from the big, beautiful bill. But the Coast Guard, FEMA, the Secret Service, and TSA will experience various hardships. As I said, this is an awful president with awful people around him and in Congress. Meanwhile, Border Czar Tom Homan announced that the immigration enforcement surge in Minnesota would be ending. As the Minneapolis Star Tribune reported, Homan praised the Trump administration's immigration operations in Minnesota, saying the surge has resulted in taking violent criminals off the street, like five-year-old William Ramos. Well, that's not fair. They didn't take him off the street. They took him out of school. Well, Homan gave no specific timeline or really policy changes, so we Minnesotans will believe it when we see it. Well, we got our friend Mark Leibovich of The Atlantic, and we get into a lot of stuff, some of it not awful, like the Winter Olympics. Oh, wait, I forgot to ask Mark about that. Well, still, it's a great one, you know, for a change. Oh, sorry about the Patriots.
Oh, man. Wasn't it great, though, to see them back in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean.
It was great to see them lose, right?
I was glad for Seattle in a way, but it was a pretty boring. It was not a good game.
It was a terrible game.
It was a terrible game. Okay, let's start with, I just want to start with some Trump stuff. I don't know if you caught his speech at the prayer breakfast last week.
Yes. Yeah, he was not very prayerful. This was, I mean, of course, like 10 things have happened since then. But yeah, I didn't watch the whole thing.
No, I watched a little bit of it and then I stopped. But your colleague at The Atlantic, Peter Winter, wrote about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes my listeners don't want to hear Trump's voice at all.
Yeah.
I'll talk about what... here are some of my favorite. He said that Winter said that it was 75 minutes of rambling, narcissism, conspiracy theories, lies, bigotry, and so on. Here are my favorite bits. Remember, this is the National Prayer Breakfast. Okay.
Yep.
And he referred to his critics as lunatics and compared them to dictators and the Gestapo at the prayer breakfast.
Yeah.
Trump praised El Salvador's authoritarian president Bukele for his quote, very strong prisons. Meaning CICOT, of course, and said Bukele is one of my favorite people.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
That's gracious. Maybe he's extending grace, prayerful grace to one of his favorite leaders.
And then Trump, for all that, got a standing ovation at the National Prayer Breakfast.
Standing ovation.
For saying that stuff.
They liked what they heard.
I guess so. So U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro tried to indict these six Democrats who made a video telling members of the military and the intelligence community. All they said was don't obey orders that are illegal. A federal grand jury failed to indict them. What were the charges? What are the charges on that?
I don't know. I mean, first of all, like, who is the attorney that has to go before the grand jury? I mean, who even?
Well,
like,
it had to be Pirro.
I guess it was Pirro herself, right?
Because no one else would do it, I assume.
I assume, although maybe they, I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, I mean, I guess to sort of state what people who know about these things have said in the last few days, which is that it is very, very hard not to get an indictment from a grand jury, because basically you have the prosecutor going in and just giving, you know, only their side of the story. You just say, look, there's this, 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 and that's really bad. So we think that this person needs to be indicted and, you know, this needs to go to court. You know, the bar is pretty low. I mean, usually you get an indictment. I mean,
yeah, but if you're this, 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 and this, what is this, 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 and this with
this?
Well,
usually this,
saying,
this, this, and this are facts. They are legal. legal.
I know the facts here are pretty simple, which is that they said, you know, don't follow illegal orders. But you know, the grand juries have not been indicting on
a number of
Letitia James. Yeah, Letitia James.
No, I mean, these are some weak, if not just purely comical cases. You know, you can obviously say, you know, regular people are standing up to this this idiocy, this authoritarianism, and so forth. But look, I mean, we only hear about the ones that aren't happening. I mean, you can imagine the things. I mean, I assume they're getting indictments everywhere. I mean,
they're not getting indictments for stuff like this.
No, not for stuff like this, but people we've never heard of who the Trump administration decides, you know, is worthy of their punishment for whatever reason. So, yeah, chilling. But in this case, you know, I think definitely the just results was achieved.
So this is also going back a couple of weeks now. When Trump sent Tulsi Gabbard and the FBI to Fulton County to get a hold of the 2020 ballots, I just saw that Trump posted a series of other conspiracy theories. Okay. And here are some stuff he posted. Italian satellites have been used to hack in the voting machines and flip votes to Biden. That old one. We heard that back in 2020, right?
Yeah.
China coordinated the whole operation, he wrote. The CIA oversaw it. The FBI covered it up, all to install Biden as a puppet. Okay, that.
Wow. By the way, Donald Trump would have been president while all this was going on, because this happened in 2020. I mean, he was president. How could he allow all that to happen?
Well, evidently, the Democrats had control of all that.
No, I mean they Biden was Biden wasn't president yet.
Yeah, the CIA oversaw it, his CIA. Mm-hmm. The FBI covered it up. You know how they control the FBI.
Yeah. Okay.
I think this makes me question whether there was a good reason for the FBI to go to Georgia. Pick up
You think? Yeah. I think that makes me question that too. Now that you mention it, I hadn't thought about it to this point. this complete lunacy here. I mean, that's the, I don't know, late night Truth Social version of the prayer breakfast rant. And of course, you know, his base gives him the virtual equivalent of a standing ovation. I mean, I don't know. It on and on it goes.
Okay. He's demanding that Congress pass the Save America Act. On Sunday, he posted this past Sunday, America's elections are rigged, stolen, and a laughingstock all over the world. We are either going to fix it or we won't have a country any longer. Are we a laughingstock all over the world? Or
yes.
I mean, because of our elections are rigged?
Well, probably because of who wins the election sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's what Trump writes. I'm asking all Republicans to fight for the following, the Save America Act. All voters must show voter ID, which are passports or birth certificate, and 21 million Americans don't have either, according to the Brennan Center. All voters must show proof of United States citizenship to register for voting. No mail-in ballots, except for illness, disability, military, or travel. That's generous. This is not going to happen, right? The Republicans are going to pass this in the House, and then Democrats will stop it in the Senate.
Yeah, presumably. I mean, yeah, I don't even know if they'll do it in the House. I mean, the margin is getting thinner by the day, and you know, there are handfuls of Republicans who seem to be empowered around things.
They voted against tariffs.
Voted against tariffs, for, you know, Epstein.
Well, Epstein, that was unanimous on.
Yeah, it was
except
unanimous.
For one member of the
House. Yeah, but I mean, look, so there is, I mean, I wouldn't say the House is as sure a bet as maybe it normally would be. But yeah, it shouldn't go anywhere in the Senate.
Now, the Supreme Court has given him full immunity. So he feels that he can ignore the law. Like, okay, this is a story, a recent story. He's withholding the $16 billion on the tunnel from New Jersey to New York.
Yeah, New Jersey, the Gateway Project.
Right, yeah. And, but he told Schumer that he'd release the funding if he could have a Penn Station and Dulles name for him.
Look, he's really, it's interesting. I mean, he's kind of a classic version of the idea that when you age, you become a more exaggerated version of yourself every single day. And usually not for the better, right? Especially when you control the nuclear codes and what have you. But I mean, it's comical. I mean, you know, it's funny, but it's not funny. I mean, again, how many different ways can you say this? Schumer told him to. I assume it is.
Schumer said, "I don't have the power to do that."
I don't have the power to do that. Correct, which is true, and it's probably
he's the minority leader, and
a good way to blow him off. And, it's comical, I think, but it does give you a window into how he's sort of how his mind is sort of ordered or disordered in his second term, which is get as many things named after me as possible. settle all personal grievances.
But he's not doing anything kind of, that people want him to do.
No. You could say, I mean, look, you can say even on the most substantive parts and troubling parts of this on, say, the immigration raids, right? I mean, they will say, this is what Donald Trump was elected to do. I mean, America wanted people to get, American people voted Donald Trump to, get tough on immigration. And to some degree, that's true, right? And
it is true.
I mean, he closed the border too. I mean, I think Americans were pretty happy to see that the number of immigrants sort of crossing the border, really ground to a halt. What they don't like is the ICE stuff and what's been going on and obviously what's been abused in any number of American cities right now. And it's really kind of come home to roost. But I mean, his numbers on immigration are underwater too. So I don't know. But no, voters did not vote for, if you look back on what voters voted on in 2024, the issue of what should Penn Station be named was not a big issue. Right. The issue of what to do with the Kennedy Center, Greenland. I mean, go down the list. I mean, the things that he seems to be spending a whole lot of time thinking about were not what got him elected in 2024.
Yeah. And you wrote this piece, we'll talk about it a little bit later. The Democrats aren't built for this. Is that basically he got elected on immigration and on cost of living,
economy.
And all those things he's underwater on now.
Yeah, no question.
So a poll yesterday that Biden would beat him now.
Yeah, I mean, the poll, it was something like 8 points too. I mean, it was like, I think the poll is like, who's done a better job as president? You know, who's a better president? And, you know, a pretty decisive margin right now, say Joe Biden, who was not the most popular guy in the world, even now. But I mean, look, I mean, his... The denouement of his presidency was tragic, and I think probably had as much to do with Kamala Harris's defeat as anything. But I do think that the best thing Democrats have going for them, and even Joe Biden retroactively has going for them, is the specter of what is going on in the White House and in the Republican Party right now.
Yeah, a year ago, 4 years after January 6th, the worst crime any president has ever committed, he got reelected.
I think he did. Yeah, I've kind of gone back and forth on this too. I've had copy editors get involved in this. I think technically he was reelected because he was. It doesn't have to be contiguous.
Okay, I want to talk about the halftime show at the Super Bowl. You know who didn't like it? Trump.
Yeah,
I got to read what he said. Okay. The Super Bowl halftime show is absolutely terrible. One of the worst ever. All caps. It makes no sense, is an affront to the greatness of America, and doesn't represent our standards of success, creativity, or excellence. I think Bad Bunny is successful and creative and excellent. Well, anyway, nobody understands a word this guy is saying. And the dancing is disgusting, especially for young children who are watching this.
Yeah.
Throughout the USA and all over the world.
Yeah.
This show is just a slap in the face to our country, which is setting new standards and records every single day, including the best stock market and 401ks in history. There's nothing inspirational about this mess of a halftime show, and watch, it will get great reviews from the fake news media because they haven't a clue of what is going on in the real world. And by the way, and this interests you, by the way, the NFL should immediately replace its ridiculous new kickoff rule. Make America great again. Now, I think that the kickoff rule is to prevent injuries, and because there's incredible number of injuries on the old kickoff, right?
Yeah, they were deemed dangerous. I don't know. I mean, I'm the NFL isn't my world anymore, but I don't know if injuries have gone up, gone down, and so forth. Obviously, the guy doesn't like the kickoff rule, and you know that's fine. That's a good sports.
Well, game. You wrote a great book about.
I did, but now I was derelict because
big game.
I was derelict because the new kickoff rule had not gone into effect yet, so I couldn't comment on it. No, I think, look, I mean, it is kind of funny that, you know, at the end of this ridiculous rant about that, he kind of pivots to like just, oh, yeah, I don't like this either.
But it's so racist.
No, it was nativistic.
But I want to just go into how racist he is for a second.
Sure.
Why not? Okay. So I guess his history starts with the Trump Company being sued, right, by the
civil
federal rights, government.
Yeah, not renting to black
people.
Renters, yeah.
Okay, and they settled on that.
Yeah, that was in the 70s.
Okay, and then he called for the death penalty for the Central Park Five.
Yeah.
Who were black and Latino. He took an ad out in the New York Times calling for... the return of the death penalty for them. And they were innocent. He goes after Somalis in Minnesota. That was the excuse to sending ICE in for some reason. Was the fraud there, and he tied it. And like 95% of Somalis in Minnesota are citizens. Mm-hmm. He called Somalia a shithole country, along with pretty much every
African country.
Yeah. He's now going after Haitians and revoking their temporary protective status. And he limits immigration to white Afrikaners. And so...
No, I guess I would just say that, yeah, there is a litany, and, you know, we see it all the time. What really, even now, kind of stopped me in my tracks was, 10 days ago or last week, whatever it was, that meme of the Obamas as monkeys. Did you see that?
The line I did, as apes, yes.
As apes, yeah, as apes. It was so over the top, even a handful of Republicans had to condemn it. Even, you know, eventually the thing got taken down. But like, yeah, I mean, it's just like, you just have to shake your head after a while. I mean, it's so just subtlety is just the subtlety of this. If there ever was any, actually there is no subtlety. I mean, the birther thing was not subtle. I mean, but yeah, I mean, it's like, it's one of those reminders, one of these chilling reminders of what is in the White House right now.
They took it down, but he wouldn't apologize for it.
No, I wouldn't apologize. No, I mean, he doesn't apologize. I mean, I'm convinced. I, Al, at this point, have enough information to declare that this is who he is. How's that? I've made my decision.
Good for you. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mark Leverage. You know, I'm always skeptical about skincare products that promise big results. But One Skin has genuinely surprised me. My daughter, Thomason, has been using their products for the last few months, and she just loves them. She says the OS1 Face Topical Supplement has improved and maintains firmness, and OS1 Tinted Face SPF is very light and not at all greasy. What really caught my attention about One Skin is that it's founded by an all-women team of PhD longevity scientists. These aren't just marketing claims. They've actually proven their patented OS1 peptide targets the cells that are a key driver of wrinkles, fine lines, and loss of elasticity. And this has been validated in 4 peer-reviewed clinical studies, which is pretty rare in skincare, I'm told. I also love that their products are certified safe for sensitive skin. They've even earned the National Eczema Association Seal of Acceptance. So you're getting powerful results without irritation. The best part, everything layers seamlessly into your routine or can replace multiple steps entirely, with over 10,000 five-star reviews and recognition from Fast Company, Bloomberg, and The Today Show. One Skin is leading the way in skin longevity. Born from over a decade of longevity research, One Skin's OS1 peptide is proven to help you unlock your healthiest skin now and as you age. For a limited time, try One Skin with 15% off using code Franken at oneskin.co/Franken. That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code Franken. After you purchase, we'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. And we are back with Mark Leibovich. I read your piece. Last month you wrote a piece, Trump's New Method of Humiliation.
Yeah.
You kind of used the gnome situation as...
Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis, but not firing her, because he won't admit a mistake now, right?
Never. But also, I mean, he's surrounded by utter loyalists. I mean, you know, Kristi Noem is, you know, in traditionally, I mean, she's a joke in some ways, right? But she is dear leader. She performs for him. She's a comical, but also kind of an ideal version of exactly what he wants in a Department of Homeland Security, you know, secretary. And so, look, but I mean, basically, he didn't fire her. She was humiliated because they pulled her out of Minneapolis. They sent Tom Homans in.
Well, they pulled out Bovino. She wasn't always in Minneapolis.
Oh, no, but no, she was there for a while. I mean, like, it was enough to sort of make a show of pulling her out. But
she did say, everything I've done at the direction of the president and Stephen Miller.
Correct. Which I believe. I mean, whether they gave a direct order or not, I mean, she certainly was doing things in line with what I expect their wishes to be.
I mean, the ICE raids, and especially, obviously, the murders, people don't like Trump's general approach to immigration. He's underwater on immigration, which was one of the things he was elected on, right?
100%. Yep. Yeah. And look, I mean, every day there are new viral videos out there. I mean, this started in Chicago, I guess L.A. and Chicago. I mean, and all over the country. I mean, the video that's available on this is an extremely powerful tool for people who, you know, not only oppose this, but who want to get the word out about it. And I think that's really what's driven public opinion more than anything.
I mean, he didn't fire Hegseth after Signal.
Signal, right.
Signalgate. And
Mike Waltz was the he was a national security advisor, the first national security advisor.
But he was just moved to the UN.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he you could argue got a better job. I mean, they made him U.S. ambassador to the UN. You know, and so that's a lateral move at worst, I think. So yeah, it didn't fire him either. But it, you know, it goes to the idea that he kind of seems to not care about what anyone thinks of him anymore, which is a dangerous place for someone to be, and certainly a party to be, but they're still, you know, in full control of the government.
I would think that Republicans who are running in the midterms would like him to think more about what people can
you would
think of him, wouldn't you?
You would think. I don't know. Most of them just seem so far gone at this point.
Let's talk a minute about his corruption. I mean, here's one I just read the other day. Biden had enacted a rule to make sure that there's sufficient aides in nursing homes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Trump got a donation from nursing home owners.
Mm-hmm.
and he ended the rule.
Wow. Sounds related.
It no, sounds I mean, related. It means more dead seniors, right? I mean,
yeah, it's the definition of corruption. But then, you know, there are new exciting definitions that we see every week.
Well, how about the cryptocurrency shit?
Oh my God!
Do Americans mind that the president is making and his family are making billions of dollars in the White House?
No, because, you know, he's not taking a salary. You know, they're always doing that. Like, you sort of say, well, you know, it's been estimated that $5 billion have gone into the Trump family coffers because of this. And then you'll always say, well, you know, he is not taking a presidential salary. He is saving taxpayers money.
$400,000 or something like that.
Yeah, I love that. They're always using that, and you know, and he can fly that $400 million jet he got from Qatar,
and they got a $500 million investment in the World Liberty Financial, which is one of their crypto ventures, and then the UAE got $500,000. Advance AI chips annually.
Yeah. Yeah. It's staggering. I don't think Americans like this. I don't think most of them think about it or know about it or understand why it's corrupt and why it's terrible and why any president preceding Donald Trump would, you know, presumably have been impeached for something like that. But I don't know. I don't have the language anymore to sort of say, you know, this is where we are. I mean, you know, some things break through more than others. I mean, I think the Minneapolis stuff was very powerful. And again, it helps to have video. It helps to see everyday people actually palpably, physically being, you know, affected by this. But in the day to day, I mean, most Americans are busy trying to live their lives. And it's really too big to get their head around, or they can't be bothered with it. And can't say I blame them. I mean, it's just we trust our presidents not to do this stuff. I mean, you talk about checks and balances. The first check and balance of a president is the president's own decency and conscience and patriotism and knowledge of what's proper and what's legal and so forth. This seems to not apply in this case. I mean, yeah, obviously presidents sometimes will step over a line or will, you know, there'll be gray areas and so forth. And we've seen that's what scandals have been in history, but nothing like this, nothing, not even close.
We met when you did a profile of me when I was in the Senate for the New York Times.
Times Magazine. We spent a lot of 2016 together, and the piece came out, I think, right around when Trump was inaugurated in 2017.
And so you're a newspaper guy. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
And you're obviously right for the Atlantic now. So you know something about newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to ask you about Bezos and the Washington Post. Okay, he's cut their staff by about, what, 30% or something like that?
Sounds like it's like in the 40s. I mean, it's close to half.
Really?
Sounds like it. Yeah, if you sort of take it over time, it's like close to half.
Okay, now, the guy's got $250 billion.
Yep.
So he didn't buy the Post, presumably, to make money, right?
Money, yeah.
If you have $250 billion, why not just keep the full staff?
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't have $250 billion, so I can't pretend to know how a guy like that thinks. But look, I mean, it's tragic. I mean, I mean, you're right. I'm a newspaper guy. I spent, you know, almost 10 years at the Washington Post before I went to the Times, and I loved that place. I mean, that place was, even when I was at the Times for many years, I considered the Washington Post the home team. And it was also probably the one institution that led me into journalism, you know, long before I worked there, like all the President's Men and so forth. And people, I do know that first of all, people who work there have traditionally just loved the place, felt very loyal to the place, even after they leave for other jobs. But yeah, in a case like this, you have literally, if not the richest guy in the world, it's got to be top five or something like that. You know, I can see why a business person doesn't want to lose money, right? I mean, you buy the Washington Post, you ideally try to make money with it, right?
I mean, I can understand he changed his editorial policy,
yeah,
after Trump won, that because he's got the $250 billion because of Amazon, and he wants to protect Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, you would think. I mean, I thought, and he gave all the you know, assurances really for the first number of years of his, since he bought it, which was in 2013, that, you know, he respected the tradition. He respected the church and state separation between editorial and the newsroom. And, you know, he seemed to be a pretty responsible and pretty committed steward to that tradition. And something twisted. I mean, something went very south, and I don't know what it was about Trump too. I don't know if it was the outward threats to his other businesses, the satellite stuff, the, you know, just like Amazon is obviously they've got their hands in everything, a lot of things. And so it's hard to know what it is, but I mean, when you see, I mean, this is less, it's kind of, I think it's harder for everyday people to appreciate because it's not the editorial side, but the newsroom, even when the newsroom started like sort of becoming more Bezos-y in the last couple of years, whatever, you know, accommodations they made to Trump. I mean, the newsroom was operating pretty well. I mean, that newspaper, even, you know, in most of the Bezos era was breaking big stories, you know, extremely competitive. I mean, some of the best journalists I know, they still are to a point, but they are severely depleted. I mean, they've just basically been cut in half and gutted. Morale there seems just dreadful. You just sort of got to wonder why. I mean, again, it's one thing if the owner is going bankrupt. It's the other thing where you have a guy who could probably fund, I don't know, 500 papers in the country, like big papers in the country, just and still have plenty of money left over for his rockets and planes and
for his yacht. I mean, he has a $500 million yacht or something.
Yeah, like what he doesn't have is a sports section or a metro or what have you. Yeah, it's really upsetting. And yeah, it's, I mean, you could go into all the nostalgia and all the great appreciation for the Washington Post and its history and so forth, but you know, mostly what it is, it's just really, really sad.
Let's go to the Epstein files. Back in November, the Epstein Files Transparency Act gave Bondi 30 days to release the files.
Mm-hmm.
It's been nearly 3 months, and now there are over 3 million pages of emails and other documents that have been released to the public. So I don't know. Do you cut them slack for that? I mean, it's
sounds like a lot, but no, I don't cut them any slack. I mean, look, okay. I guess, you know, in a vacuum, I mean, if they were trying to operate on good faith on any number of other issues, you'd say, okay, well, look, this is a massive volume of files. If we need to give them a grace period of a week or whatever, I mean, that's fine. But no, I mean, you have no reason to think anything not nefarious is going on here.
So you think what I think that they're.
Yeah, I would say so. Tell me what you think, and I'll agree or disagree. But I think I'm going to agree.
Well, one of the things I think is that they redacted all the names of the men,
mm-hmm.
At least for the public.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't seem to be in any hurry to indict anybody.
Yeah, I don't see any. I mean, was it? I guess who was it?
And she, you know, was kind of asked about that, but she didn't answer anything.
She didn't answer. No, I mean, like, no one's been indicted. No one has been indicted for any of this stuff. I mean, Jerry Nadler was on the committee. Congressman made that point. She just attacked him.
She attacked pretty much everyone.
Oh, everyone.
Yeah. Every Democrat.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch, but I've seen enough highlights to know that, like, look, I mean, classic audience of one thing. She's got her echo chamber. And
audience of one being, obviously.
President Trump, yeah.
Yeah. And so I watched some of it in the afternoon.
What'd you think?
It was shocking. I mean, it was shocking. I've never seen anything like
still,
this.
Are you still shocked, though? I mean, is it just like next level of shock?
Well, the thing I was most shocked at was there were survivors there, right?
And
there
I was, know, right?
Like, I don't know, it seemed like 12, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And the most shocking thing to me, they were asked to stand up, and they were behind her, you know, because she was facing the committee, and she didn't turn around to acknowledge them. I can't believe that she didn't do that. I mean, why would a human being, especially in her position,
mm-hmm.
just say, you know, I mean, maybe she just, I haven't prepared anything to say to them and I don't know what to say. So maybe I should, you know, like, thank you. She could have said, thank you for coming today. I apologize if you didn't redact your phone number or something like that.
Yeah. No, she didn't do any of that. No, I mean, I think she probably, if I had to guess, her thought process was probably thinking, well, if I turn around and do any kind of acknowledgement here, it will look weak and the president will be angry with me. You know, I mean, they're basically following the script of complete callousness. You know, anyone perceived as being hostile to, you know, the administration or to whatever, I mean, is not worthy of any basic humanity, even when you've been traumatized to the degree that these survivors were. And
that's a chilling analysis of that. Well, I must say.
I think it's probably true. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know Pam Bondi.
But yeah, I just got one clip. You know, I didn't want, there's a million clips, but my favorite, I think the context of this, she was interrupting somebody. And Raskin steps in. Peter, you have that?
You're the Attorney General of the United States. We have rules here.
You're obsessed with him.
You're the Attorney General of the United States.
You're obsessed with Donald Trump. You have Trump derangement syndrome.
You can let her filibuster all day long, but not on our watch. Not on our time. No way. And I told you about that, Attorney General, before you started.
You don't tell me.
Yeah, I did tell you because we saw what you did in the Senate.
A lawyer, not even a lawyer.
So she says he's washed up. You're not even a lawyer. Now, this is Jamie Raskin, who taught at Harvard Law for 20 years, you know, graduated in law in Harvard, and he took the bar, and he passed it. He passed the bar.
I'd call him a lawyer. I'm no lawyer, but I'd call him a lawyer. I'm just a country lawyer, but I'd call him a lawyer. Yeah, I watched that. I mean, actually, that was one of the clips I saw. I don't feel it made me smarter or happier. again, the only way that that people like this can shock me at this point is just to turn the volume up. And you know, this was a, I guess, higher volume that we're used to. But I don't know. I mean, it is not fun to watch. I mean, I can't imagine that's persuading any voters. If that's even what this is about, I tend not to think so. But
it was about pleasing the boss.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
And now Democrats were, a number of them were basically accusing her of withholding stuff. And you sound like you're in that camp.
Sounds like it. I mean, I certainly wouldn't put it past her. And I think, you know, I don't for a second think that full transparency has been realized here in any way, shape, or form.
Is there going to be any pressure from, you know, for any of these men to be indicted? Or is it possible they can not do that?
I mean, what to me, I mean, what I think the potential game changer would be is if Republicans stood up in a way that, like they did a few months ago, and because, you know, this was a fairly bipartisan issue, especially
it was unanimous in the Senate and one vote in the House.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it had a lot of support among, you know, in sort of elements of the MAGA base, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and, you know, when she was in Congress. I mean, you know, it definitely has been a fracture point for a lot of Republicans, but it does seem like after the initial vote and after, you know, the beginnings of the releases that we've had, a lot of people have just opted out. It's like, we're on to the next thing. I do think that maybe this is what the administration was counting on. It's just a whole lot of outrage at once, and it's hard for people to process this, right? Especially when you're trying to figure out cryptocurrency corruption. But it's all very, I mean, you do sort of wonder, like, was the momentum of, say, 6 weeks ago, was that the summit? And it's been kind of like a kind of a sudden decline since then in interest. But I mean, I don't know. I do think that there have been fewer Republicans who have managed to keep up the outrage that might have existed a few months ago.
I thought this hearing might rekindle it.
Maybe. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, look, I don't think an average person would be happy with that or satisfied with those kinds of
things. Well, this is actually who counts, I think. I think average people.
Yeah, you know? I would think. I mean, I think the answer is
that. I think that's what's been driving it. I think, you know. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mark Leibovich. You know that friend who still insists on doing everything the hard way? The one paying for subscriptions they forgot about? Refusing to upgrade their phone because it still works? Well, if you're still overpaying for wireless in 2026, that friend might be you. Let me tell you about Mint Mobile. With Mint Mobile, you're getting the exact same premium wireless coverage and speed that you expect, with unlimited talk, text, and data, but without that inflated price tag the big carriers love charging you. It's literally the same service for a fraction of the cost. And right now, for a limited time, you can get 50% off 3, 6, or 12-month plans of unlimited premium wireless. You can bring your own phone and number, activate with eSIM in just minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle. Plus, you have a 7-day money-back guarantee, so there's no reason not to try it. Ready to stop paying more than you have to? New customers can make the switch today, and for a limited time, get unlimited premium wireless for just $15 a month. Switch now at mintmobile.com/franken. That's mintmobile.com/franken. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for a 12-month plan required. That's the equivalent of $15 a month. Taxes and fees are extra. Initial plan term only. Speeds may slow above 50 gigabytes when the network is busy. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com for details. And we are back with Mark Leibovich. Now, you wrote this piece and you talk about Ken Martin, who's now the chairman of the Democratic National Party. He was chair of the DFL party, the Democratic Farmer Labor Party in Minnesota, and was there when I ran and successfully. And the first sentence, I think, in your article is about, what did you say? He has one of those resting dread faces.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of fair. I mean, I have to say, he does have that. He and I think at the time that you probably first talked to him, he was going through shit, right?
He's always going through shit, right? I mean, I mean, being a party chairman does not seem all that fun to me.
Well, especially the Democratic Party.
Especially the Democratic Party in this day and age, you know, coming off of 2024 when the party is, you know, very dispirited. I mean, you know, Donald Trump was just reelected despite, you know, go down the list, lose the House, he lose the Senate.
He was elected despite being convicted.
And many counts. Yeah, it's, yeah, he was elected despite, yeah, go down the list.
And sexual assault. I mean, there he was actually in a civil, it was a civil thing, but he was convicted by a jury of, ruled by a jury that he sexually assaulted, I mean, basically raped E. Jean Carroll.
Yeah, I mean, a majority of Americans were fine with all that, and they elected him again. And so then you have Ken Martin, and you have the Democratic Party, and you know, the Democrats have not, I would say, until maybe recently, waged a particularly effective fight against what Trump has done and the abuses. And I think a lot of Democrats are extremely upset at the performance of the leaders.
The polling in that you cite is like 78% of Americans
satisfied with Chuck Schumer, with Hakeem Jeffries, certainly with Biden.
Oh, you asked Martin if Biden was should have not run or should have dropped out like when he said he would. When he ran in 20, he said that he would be a transitional
right
president.
Right, exactly.
And you asked Martin if he thinks that he stayed in that too long, and he wouldn't say way or the other.
Martin's big thing is he swears all the time, very ostentatiously, publicly these days, like a lot of Democrats. Democrats are big into swearing.
You point that out.
Yeah. And Martin was like, you know, we just got to like take off the gloves and just go completely nuts and just call out everything and not be afraid to throw a punch and land and be honest and just let the cards fall where they may and so forth. And I sort of at this point just wanted to sort of test the proposition. I said, all right, so should Joe Biden have run in 2024 or did he stick around too late? Was he too old? And he immediately went into sort of obfuscation mode where he said, well, I don't want to look into the past. And you have a time machine? I can't change it. Well, I don't have a time machine, but I want to know if you think he was too old. And he goes, I'm not going to answer that. I'm like, well, so much for like, you know, letting him rip, Chairman. He goes, like, I'm fine. I said, I just don't care who I offend these days. And I said, well, you don't want to offend President Biden. Do you? You know, I don't care if I offend him or not. I mean, it was one of those sort of circular conversations where, again, if you're a party chair, I mean, it's not fun to have a guy like me asking questions like this, but it's also not fun to have to, you know, talk like this because you obviously have to keep, you know, a pretty large and very diverse and pretty fractured constituency within the Democratic Party happy. And
no kidding.
Yeah. As you know.
Now, so there were a lot of autopsies that came out after the 2024. And basically they were Democrats are weak and out of touch.
Yeah. Lost health, working class.
They moved too left on crime, the working class. And the data you show on where Democrats are, here's something you have in the piece. You say that the poor feel Republicans best represent their interests, and Democrats, the rich elites.
Mm-hmm.
Romney, in I guess 2012, right, won people making over $100,000 by 10 points.
Correct. Yep.
Kamala, in 2024, won people making over $100,000 by four.
Right.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. And the other side of this is even more amazing, which is that Obama won working class voters by a huge
22.
Number, 22 points.
22.
And I think against Kamala, Trump carried it by a couple. I mean, Trump won. I mean,
Trump carried people making less than 50,000 by, I think, by 2 points.
I mean, which is an incredible flip of the two parties' identities. And it's a big problem. I mean, it's a massively damning statement about where the party has gone and how they've lost working class voters and how people perceive Democrats to be. You know, there's a whole lot of hand-wringing and a whole lot of white papers and after-action reports, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I have my desk at the Atlantic is just like sky high with these things. I don't know what I'm going to do with them now that the piece is run. I guess I'll just have to like plaster my bathroom with it or something like that.
Now, you go around the country, right?
I do.
How long a period did you do this?
I started in about maybe late August of last year. So probably a period of maybe 4 or 5 months. Then I started to write. And I mean, there are a lot of really interesting races, obviously. You got the Texas Senate race, you got the Maine Senate race, and the Michigan Senate race. Spent a lot of time with Martin. Went to, you know, kind of those Bernie oligarch rallies and, you know, spent some time with like AOC but also just talked to, you know, Newsom and some of the people who want, like Alyssa Slotkin, who senator from Michigan.
Sure.
You know, just a lot of elected Democrats and so forth. And, you know, look, I wanted to sort of get a sense of why the party was still in the wilderness and where this was all leading. And the product of this is this endless but extremely compelling piece that you have you read it? You read the whole thing,
I
right?
did, yeah, yeah.
Endless, right? No, but it's good.
No, it's not that long. It's 25 pages. Something
no,
like
it's
that.
Not. No, it's not that long.
But there are and a lot of interesting races. You were talking about Texas as Jasmine Crockett, who is kind of an emerging star. And then she's running against this
James Tallarico.
Tallarico, who's kind of religious, known, and he has a big following, and is more moderate.
He's perceived as more moderate, talks about Jesus everywhere. I mean, he's a seminarian, and he's got all these, you know, great speaker. He's a little bit, I mean, very well spoken. I mean, he's had a lot of like speeches about scripture, about how Republicans are so hypocritical and not caring about the poor and judging and so forth.
Oh, that old Jesus like the poor kind of thing?
That whole thing. Yeah. He's big into that. Yeah. But no, I mean, he's definitely developed a following. He's raised a ton of money. I mean, you know, like a lot of sort of national sensations, viral sensations, he's raised a lot of money around the country. But, you know, seems to be gaining some momentum. You know, Crockett's more of a rock star. I mean, she's been around longer. She's better known nationally. And has sort of gone viral for her own reasons, you know, around stuff in the House. So interesting race. I mean, a lot of people, and, you know, and if Republicans nominate Ken Paxton, who's the very, very far right, very controversial. Very
this is Cornyn's seat, and Cornyn's Paxton, seat. Who is the AG, what is he?
Paxton's the AG. So Cornyn, you know, longtime senator from Texas, viewed very much with, you know, he's an establishment figure of the highest order in Texas. Trump, MAGA world, has never really been that warm to the guy. I mean, the question is, who's Trump going to endorse? I mean, will he endorse someone who I think, you know, Paxton, who he probably likes more, but who could be toxic in a general election or certainly more vulnerable in a general election, or whether Trump would go with what I think is probably the safer choice for Republicans if they want to keep the seat, which is Senator Cornyn.
Can you talk about the Maine race, Graham Plattner?
Yeah, that's interesting. So Plattner is this political neophyte, 41-year-old oyster farmer. Went up there, went out on his oyster boat. This was not recent.
He's in Iraq, Afghanistan.
He's basically spent his whole half his life, I mean, most of his adult life in Iraq and Afghanistan. Came home, you know, started this oyster business, or sort of, you know, got into the oyster farming business. I was not familiar with it, but I went out on his boat again, not in the winter months, because I think whatever the cove was is probably frozen now, but it was September. Yeah, I mean, he's a big Bernie guy, getting huge crowds, also drawing a lot of money, lightning in a bottle. Is running against in the main primary, in the Democratic primary, against Janet Mills, who's the
79
now, yeah, popular but old. You can be old and popular, not mutually exclusive. Anyway, the governor of Maine.
And they're running against, they're running for Collins' seat.
Yes, who's been there forever, always seemed to be vulnerable. I mean, Maine's a pretty blue state, and yet Collins has managed to get reelected a number of times.
It sounds like he's going to get the nomination to me.
Maybe. I mean, he's been very durable. I mean, I think after his initial, you know, sort of shot out of the gate, the momentum, I mean, he had some real controversies. I mean, a bunch of old Reddit posts.
He has some Reddit posts that
about how rural voters can be racist and stupid and just a lot of problematic stuff out there. And then he has a tattoo, apparently, that people have pointed out, you know, has a lot of Nazi connotations. He claimed that he didn't know about them. He has since covered over or distorted the maybe Nazi or Nazi adjacent image. But anyway, yeah, he's had some real controversy, but his support's been pretty durable. And, you know, the polls are a little unreliable. But I mean, I think he could win. There's no question against Mills. Not sure he could win against Collins, but.
Well, she'll use a lot of that stuff against them, I'm sure.
No question. No question.
Yeah. So you talked to Newsom,
yep.
And Pritzker, who seem to both be running for president.
Yeah, I think so. And Trump has also said that both should be arrested. So that would create a very small group of people who both went to jail, but also shared a debate stage. So they could share a debate stage or a jail cell.
But he says so many people should go to prison, including Democrats. And by the way,
that's highly irregular in a normal president.
Yes. But,
now it's just sort of like, well, I guess it's what, Wednesday or whatever, Thursday. I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Basically, everyone now is sort of saying Democrats will take the House. Yeah, but it's still a longer way away than I like to.
Yeah, I think I am always wary because I've seen this a lot, and I assume you've seen this a lot. Democrats are pretty giddy right now, which is pretty bizarre because, I mean, if you look at the polls, I mean, they seem to be breaking pretty decisively in the direction of Democrats, mostly based on complete revulsion of what Trump is doing and so forth. You know, not an unfamiliar story. I mean, the party in control overreaching and, you know, you go with the alternative. But I do think Democrats do, and I think this is kind of the takeaway of the piece. I mean, they're in a better place than they were 4 or 5 months ago just because time has passed, Republicans have screwed up, and more people seem to be hating Republicans more than they hate Democrats at this point. But again, I think that parties obviously are not monoliths, and you are defined by who the candidates are. And you know, as you remember, Al, I mean, Democrats were completely distraught after John Kerry lost in 2004. Like, what are we ever going to do? Are we going to be a permanent minority party like Karl Rove predicted? And then all of a sudden, you know, this guy comes along named Barack Obama, and the Democratic future was set for the next decade or so. The problem is they didn't really bother with a future after that. And Republicans were completely back on their heels in 2012. They commissioned this autopsy. The RNC commissioned this autopsy, and like, lo and behold, they did everything the autopsy said they shouldn't do and nominated this guy, Donald Trump, who would go on and sort of define the party for the next decade. So to some degree, these wilderness periods are hard to talk about and are hard to quantify.
In the last year or so, in terms of state legislative seats, I think Democrats have won 26 to zero.
Yeah, haven't lost.
And contested.
Correct. Yeah.
And last one was in Louisiana, and she won by a massive margin over in a district that Trump won by like, in the teens, right?
Yeah, and there was one in Oklahoma a few days ago, massive. I mean, you know, again, I think some of these districts are a little weird because you just don't know who's running, and I mean, I don't know.
The candidates matter.
The candidates and so forth. But no, I mean, they've overperformed consistently. Certainly they overperformed in the off-year election last year. Yeah, all those indicators are even better than what the polls show. I mean, there's a level of energy the Democrats have. But look, there's a lot of reason to be nervous too, because one, I mean, forget like the whole election integrity thing and like what Republicans might.
Oh, well, that's the last thing I want to discuss. Yeah. Is he going to, I mean, he, He says that there are 15 states that the federal government needs to run the election.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that's ridiculous. That won't happen. It can't happen.
Yeah, but he might try. I mean, yeah, I mean, he said recently he wants to nationalize elections, which, you know, doesn't make a lot of sense. But it's also, I mean, it's a real, I mean, it's authoritarian, you know, really at you know, the definition of authoritarian in some ways. I mean, it's very much against every principle of, like, American elections.
Well, you know, there's Article 2 of the Constitution, which gives the states the authority to run elections.
I wouldn't put it past him to try any number of these things. I think Democrats need to be as vigilant as they possibly can be, although I don't know how you do this.
Well, we go to the Supreme Court.
Thank you for doing this.
Al, always a pleasure. Great to be with you. God help us all. You know what? Good to see you smiling, because at least you're smiling.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you don't have good dreams, you've got nightmares.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.